The information in this video or podcast is not intended nor implied to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. All content, including text, graphics, images, and information contained in this video or podcast, is for general information purposes only and does not replace your professors or a consultation from your own doctor or healthcare professional.
Welcome back.
Welcome to another episode.
We are so excited that you guys joined us again. Today we have a special hot pocket.
Is that where you were going with that?
No, but now I am. We have a special topic today.
We're going to be talking about myocardial infarctions, some personal experiences, as well as some clinical experiences.
Exactly. It hits a little bit more near and dear to my heart.
But we only know so much about this topic.
Yes. So. But let's go ahead and get into that intro.
The PTA Podcast with your host, Ken.
And Laura, thanks again for joining for another exciting episode. All right,
let's get into it.
Let's do it.
So today we're talking about MIs, myocardial infarctions. So getting into the topic, what do you want to talk about first?
Okay, so first, what I would say, let's talk about what an MI is.
Okay. It's a heart attack.
It is. It's pretty much when usually blood supply is cut off from a portion of the heart, which literally means that portion is dying. And so because of the fact that it's not getting any blood supply or not enough, it has pain, which...
It's also irreversible once it happens and the tissue's dead.
Mm-hmm.
The tissue's dead.
Yeah.
It ain't coming back.
Yeah. So that's why a lot of times like people... will die in definitely certain areas. It all depends on the location of it, but it happens within the arteries, usually from a buildup of what's the word I'm looking for?
Like atherosclerosis?
No.
Buildup of plaque?
Cholesterol. Yeah. High cholesterol.
Oh, you're thinking of like what caused it. Gotcha.
Yeah. So, it's buildup of
plaque
that causes the artery to close off, and because of that it limits the blood supply that goes through, and then of course no blood, no oxygen, no nutrients, it starts to die off. And that's why timing with heart attacks are important. Blood thinners are important. Once you have a heart attack, you usually don't... Like, something's happening. You can't just, like, walk away from it in a way, if that makes sense. Like,
yeah, like something caused
there's
it.
Some, like there's always going to be some type of intervention that they're going to do, whether it is them putting the balloon in, inflating it, and kind of opening it up
putting
more.
Putting, like, stents in. And
yeah, stents, gotcha. Thank you. Or going under and having a cab.
Cabbage.
Mm-hmm.
I also, weirdly enough... even though I think I don't know if I read it or I heard it in another podcast, actually, like even though patients are told that if they don't change their life habits because of like what caused the heart attack, they're still likely to experience another one because they will not make those life changes.
Yeah. That's usually the case. And then I think you're also just more prone to it too. So I've personally had experience, with it. Well, not me.
Okay. The way you said it made it sound like you're the one that had a heart attack.
So it personally affects like my family. My dad was quite young. I think he was in his, 40s when he had his first quadruple bypass. So that is where he had four blockages and they had to go in and legit take a artery from his arm. I believe it was the first one that they did from the arm within that hospital at the time, and they bypassed the blockage areas. So a little side note real quick, I learned this later on, is if you can only actually have a bypass when a certain amount is actually blocked. Like, say it's, you know, at 60% block, they won't do a bypass. The reason being is you have to have enough blood flow in the bypass to create pressure to keep that actually open.
interesting.
Mm-hmm. So we learned that because
interesting. Sorry, that didn't come out.
Interesting. I thought you were just trying to be creepy about it.
No, I literally had no voice in that moment. And I realized that it probably came out really low.
But yeah, so like my dad went through when I was super young. And then actually when I was going through my PTA program, he started having pain again when he went into his checkup. He didn't tell my mom that he had to take his nitro, which if you had a heart attack, again, you're more likely to carry that around. It is like a hardcore, like
a vasodilator.
So it opens up everything. And so then that way they are more likely to be able to get in and get help type thing. But first thing on it that I like learned during a second one was bypasses only have, like they do have a year limit on them in a way. So most bypasses are only effective for 10 to 15 years.
So this, like what would come first? The need for the revision or something going wrong?
So for my dad, it was the need for a revision.
Okay, so they were trying to stay ahead of it. Versus well, like,
they don't do it until this. They need it. So like he was just getting the... So what happens is the original bypass, so the part that they added to... That's a new segment, right? Of the artery. That starts to fail. Once that starts to fail, your blood originally tries to go through the original blockage that's there. And so the issue with that, though, is there's a blockage and it you have the original issue back. So now they're trying to... Then they try to do another bypass around that original blockage again.
So they keep trying to make more detours.
Yeah, pretty much. And the hard part is, so like usually you do see this in commonly more older patients. You don't really see it in young people because like we talked about, it's a buildup in plaque. My dad was pretty young for having his first one. It does run in his family, which we kind of say sucks for my brother because so far it's hit every single, the youngest male in every single part of my dad's family. So,
jeez.
Yeah, we're like, good luck. That being said, like me and my sister are technically at higher risk too for it. But the second thing we learned after my dad's surgery, my dad's second surgery, is the surgeon actually came out and was like, yeah, it took a long time, A, because they had to re-crack it, his chest. And we'll kind of talk about that in a second, about the different techniques that they can do the surgery. But they also said he had really small arteries considered to the size of his heart, which was kind of funky. They were like, yeah, for his age, weight, body size, heart size, like his arteries.
Just like relatively.
Yeah. They were just like his, which they're like, that could be why there's family history of it, is there could be an actual, like, the family just runs smaller arteries, which is...
Is there a name for that? Because I know someone else...
They didn't say anything about it. They didn't mention a name, but it was just something she brought up. No okay. one's kind of mentioned curious. But I will say, like, his... And this is how I found out about... So technically three things. But that's how we found out about the bypass needing a certain amount of blockage in the original one. It's because my dad's actually failed. He had his second surgery, went in, and they did the bypass on two of them. And then all of a sudden, he just said he felt kind of funky, and his heartbeats were a little funky for a while. And then they're like, okay, well, we're going to still send you home after his stent. Like, nothing was crazy out of the ordinary. And then he had to do a checkup, and they reviewed it. They did imaging, and they were like, "Yeah, your bypass has failed. Your arteries opened up, your original ones opened up." They didn't really have an answer, and they're like, "Well, because and that's why the bypass failed is because the original ones opened up more, so the blood was
went back to its original course, I suppose,
and that's why. So you have to have enough pressure on the bypasses to keep them open, or they will just collapse on themselves.
When someone gets their cabbage, and it says like cabbage times four, or cabbage times five.
That's how many they had done.
But at that time or in total?
Usually it's at that time.
So let's say like you were cabbage four the first time, right?
Yeah, that's at least I'm pretty sure how my dad.
The next time you come in, you need two more. You're now a cabbage two?
Well, because or cabbage six. I think it depends on if they're new or not, if that makes sense.
Well, let's say they're 10 years apart.
Well, it depends on the location still. Are you going in bypassing the original clot again?
No.
Or are these new clots? I'm not sure.
Oh.
But that's something to think about. I don't know. But from what I know is like when he first went in, it was for quadruple bypass, which is for four. And then when he went in the second time, it was a double bypass, which was just the two. And that's how they called it. So they talked about it.
Procedure, not in total.
Yeah, they talked about by the procedure, not how many he's had.
Correct.
So, but going back to like, again, just like my experience with my dad, treatment for us on our end is it's just important to know because, you know, if they start complaining of heart pain or, well, chest pain, shortness of breath, feeling like there are bricks on them, pain going down their arm, that's something that you definitely, like, in anybody you need to take seriously. But if they have had previous heart issues or have had an MI, like, you need to be very aware of that, and time is of the essence.
Have you treated anybody with a cabbage?
I've had people who's had heart attacks, yeah.
But, like, a fresh cabbage. Like, they just had a cabbage 2 days ago.
Post-op. No. So most patients will go to a special cardiac rehab that's geared specifically, like they have a cardiac program. A lot of times it will be within the hospital. There are some outstanding buildings separate from the hospital that will be there. But like, for example, my dad, he went back to the hospital and did his cardiac rehab. It's very strict. It's very limited. There's a lot of things they cannot do. Like, so you don't add, and it also depends on the procedure too. So sometimes they're limited by, for example, you could either, nowadays you can have your chest cracked. So you can have open heart surgery, which means they literally go in, they crack you open. Just like what you think of. They like, open everything up, cut down the center. My dad's literally goes from the top of his sternum down to his belly button is his incision scar. They use a bone saw. They cut through the sternum, crack it, open up the ribs and everything. And it's then
really painting me a picture here.
Yeah. And then they get to the heart, and then they move things around and everything like that. Of course, that is way more invasive. But however, nowadays, there's a lot of times they can actually do it orthoscopic now. Depending on where the location of the clot is.
I'm sure the extent of damage and what they have to do.
What they have to do, what the clot is. But for example, they said, like for my dad's second one, he wasn't a candidate for orthoscopic. Because one, the location of where one of his was needed, they said it's on the arch and they can't get into the right position with the tools. Second is because he had previously had a open heart surgery, and the amount of scar tissue to go through was not going to work with.
Just be a pain in the butt.
It just, they said they won't get through.
Yeah. It
so work. His surgery the second time took like 5 hours, 4 to 5 hours. A majority of that, they said, was just going through the scar tissue from the original surgery. Yeah. Because you just have to remember, all that scar tissue just lays down and attaches to everything. And then they have to delicately separate it all to open it all up. So it's a lot of little things.
Well, I did a couple treatments of cabbage patients when I was inpatient.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like 1-2 days afterwards. At that point, I know about going to a cardiac rehab where they're more monitored for their heart rate, respiratory mm-hmm. rates. Like, they have specific protocols. Like, this patient can't go above 90 beats per minute yeah. or whatever the case may be.
Or it can't jump this amount.
Yeah, like, you have to see with how much on the bike and see what it went up to. But we did a couple of patients where it's just like, all right, well, let's just do a lap and mm-hmm. stuff. A lot of these patients were in the CVCU wing or yep.
the so one. So cardiac red. Intensive care.
Yeah. And
which is recovery too, usually. But
so yeah, so all of those, same thing, to monitor their heart rate, their oxygen levels. And then they all get this fun-sized heart pillow. And, like, they have to follow their... My
dad had a teddy bear.
Their sternum protocols.
So he got a heart pillow the second time, but he got originally a teddy bear.
A teddy bear.
Do you want to explain what the teddy bear's for or the heart pillow's for? Or do you want me to?
Well, I'll tell you what I remember from mm-hmm. it. Maybe you know more, but... it's essentially just a reminder for their protocols. Because if they hug the pillow when they're moving, they don't break their protocols. You don't yeah. want to do any movement that would separate the chest or expand the chest. So you can't be pushing off the bed with your arms. You can't be pulling yourself up with your arms. Pretty much hugging that would make you use your legs and prevent the expansion of the sternum.
Yeah, so it definitely helps with the reminder of the protocols, but it also helps with little things like, for example, when you go to sneeze and when you go to cough.
It takes some pressure off.
Yeah, it takes the pressure off. So I will say this. The mistake we made as a family is after my dad's first heart surgery, George of the Jungle came out. You might be too young for this, Kenny, but George of the Jungle...
Well, you're not...
Was a not the Disney one, like the live action George of the Jungle. Was there
There's
just
a Disney
there
one?
Was not a Disney one, but okay, so George of the Jungle
How
came
much
out.
Much older do you think you are than me?
But George of the Jungle came
George
out.
George of the Jungle,
and my dad, that's like my dad's sense of humor. So we were wanting to be the nice family and take him to the movies because he got out.
You guys tortured him with a comedy film and he was laughing and increased his pressure. And
yeah, that bear guys got hugged are mean. A lot. Hey, I was only like 5, okay?
You guys are mean.
It wasn't me. It was all my mom. But
you went from as this is a family idea to it was my mom's idea.
I was 5. Do you really think I had a choice? I was around that age. But sure. That was one of the things is he said his bear saw a lot of action during that movie of him.
That sounds wrong. I need you to rephrase that.
I phrased it purposely that way. But his bear definitely got squeezed.
There you go.
Quite often because of the fact that, you know, he was laughing, that chest is expanding. And not only is it like because of the protocols, it hurts. And yeah. So it helps them from, like, by hugging that teddy bear, it kind of helps take the pressure off, like we talked about. But it also helps, like, alleviate them from tightening up more because of the fact that, you know, they're not trying to stop it in a weird way. They're just trying to migrate that movement.
No, yeah, so they use the pillow almost, like, as soon as we walked in, we would hand them the pillow, make sure they know the protocols.
Here's and your BFF.
It is their BFF. Yeah. It really is. And then we would walk home and they would just bring the pillow with them.
Mm-hmm.
But they just, they can't bear any weight through their upper extremities. And that intra-abdominal pressure is not comfortable. So it definitely helps there too.
Yeah. And like, I believe, I'm not 100% sure. And since you saw some during clinical rotation, believe that they all take from the arm now, correct?
They all what from the arm?
They took the bypasses from the arm.
I don't know. That's a great question. If anybody listening knows, let us know.
Well, so they used to take it from the leg because it was usually beefier and just kind of had, that's a good area you could take it from. When my dad had his first one, he was the first one within Pomona Valley Hospital to have it actually done for the arm. The reason is they found that the recovery was faster because of the fact that they were able to get patients up and moving quicker because they didn't have, you know, surgery on their leg. And like, when I'm talking about surgery, like when my dad had it, it wasn't orthoscopic on his arm. Like, he has from his wrist up to his elbow.
Your dad's just full of battle scars, isn't he?
My dad has so many battle scars. It's a good thing, like, he's totally okay with scars. With
the looks of scars.
Yeah. So, like, they took it from there. So, that's also something that you have to just keep in your mind. You're not just treating usually the area, like, the chest. You also have some other aspect that's been involved too. So I think most of them come from the arm now.
I don't know, I'd have to check.
Some of them, I'm not even sure on this, but I've heard that they're doing like cadavers and I think pig.
A pig?
Mm-hmm.
Actually, no, that sounds familiar.
But I'm not sure. That one I'd have to do more research on. So. But yeah, so when it comes down to rehab as a PTA, the biggest thing is knowing the doctor's protocols. Most of them are pretty much standard. It is definitely a do not try to cross line. There's not really much wiggle room, I would say, in treatment of that. If you're within the hospital, most of the time it's going to be teaching a lot of patient education of properly how to get out of bed, properly stand up, and then also just getting them up and moving, which is just walking too.
Yeah, it was just constant reminders of what they should be doing and shouldn't. Do you know your protocols? Do you know what you're not supposed to be doing? And you'll see them go for it and be like, can't do that.
All right.
So the treatments mainly warranted just what their protocols were. So
yeah,
you walk in, you read off the protocols, or you make sure they know their protocols, and you just see it through that they're actually performing them. And most of the times they should already know what their protocols are when you walk in, but you'll still see that instinctually they'll still go for it. They'll still reach towards behind them. They'll still try to weight bear through their upper extremities. And it's like,
it's hard to break those habits.
It is. But those are the things that I feel like start your treatments. And then after that is when you start going for, let's go for a little bit of walk, see if we can make it to the door and then back to your bed. Maybe the next visit will go into the hallway. And then maybe the next visit after that, we can do like a small lap. But no matter what, you're always monitoring their heart rates, their oxygen levels, just to make sure that they don't go a little too high or too low or any abnormal spikes, I would say. And like, those are the things that you would want to keep an eye on as you're doing your treatment.
Yeah, and a lot of it's just going to kind of be pretty much building the patient's tolerance up at a very appropriate
pace.
Climb. Yeah, pace. There we go. Climb, pace. But if you guys have anything that you guys encountered that you found were really helpful, whether it was some tips or even some tricks that you did with patients to help them, A, remember their protocols, or B, you found that, hey, this exercise was a great one and didn't wear them out too much but got a good workout in, let us know. Let the comment, put the comments in. Go to our Facebook page.
Yeah, post it on there, or post tag us on Twitter.
Yeah.
Obviously, we don't have too much of a background when it comes to treating these kinds of patients. I did a little bit of my clinical rotation. Laura has a family member, but still not the same as someone who has seen those odd cases here and there and be like,
or worked in an actual setting that is more cardiac base.
Yeah. So let us know what you guys think, and
definitely,
we'll mention it in another episode perhaps.
But we've got some exciting episodes coming for the next couple ones. We will be having our old supervising therapist come on, and he's going to be discussing dry needling. And then even the episode after that, we are going to have another guest. And that one, you're just going to have to wait and see what happens.
I feel like you're more excited about this than our guest speaker, to be honest.
Probably. I'm so excited, guys. You have no idea.
We'll see how this goes.
But don't forget to follow us on Twitter, Instagram, join our Facebook group. Please be very active. Again, this isn't for a particularly one state. You know, yes, we are in Nevada. That's where most of our knowledge comes from. That's where our rules of what we can and cannot do come from.
But this is where everyone can chime in on exactly. their things, on what they practice, and another way for you to get to know other like-minded individuals. If you want to practice someone else somewhere else, then you can ask for maybe some work recommendations or just try to make some connections. That's all.
Yeah, and don't forget to share, guys. That helps us a lot. Honestly, sharing, liking, commenting, subscribing,
providing feedback.
Oh, that would
help us out a lot as well.
Huge.
If you can do us that favor,
even if it's like a "this is great, not my favorite."
Yeah, let us
know
some direction.
Yeah, we really want this to be a podcast for our PTAs, and we can't do that without your guys' input. We can go based off of what we like, but we really want this to be kind of geared towards everybody, so we need your input. So let us know. But other than that, you guys have a wonderful rest of the day, and we will catch you next time.
Take care.
Bye.